John, how can you always have the right TV for the right application without carrying hundreds of valves on your truck?
You can carry the hundreds of valves on a trailer behind your truck.
That's too funny. That would work, but how are you going to do that? Maybe there's an easier way.
You can use Sporland's interchangeable cartridge style Type Q and Type BQ TEVs. Type Q is a conventional design and Type BQ is a balanced port TEV.
Well, come on, I need easy. How easy is it?
Easy is 1, 2, 3.
And it serves thousands of unique applications. So what's the process? How do I put this together?
First, you select the thermostatic element assembly. Then you select the body that you need. Then you select the right size cartridge for the application to get the proper capacity TEV for your application. And then I guess it should also be said you want to actually assemble those to a single valve.
That'd probably be a good idea. These easy to select and assemble valves mean you're always carrying the right valve for the right job then. If folks want to learn more, what do they do?
You can go to Sporland.com and find more information on the Type Q and BQ thermostatic expansion valves.
I guess that's Jim and John for Sporland signing off.
This episode is sponsored by United Refrigeration and Westermeyer Industries, revolutionizing your HVACR experience. Visit URI.com for all your HVACR needs, offering real-time inventory, personalized pricing, and a nearby stock feature. Access quick pick replacement parts and branch details effortlessly. With 350 plus fully stocked locations across North America, our knowledgeable staff are ready to assist with the solutions you need. Exclusive offer. Use code ARPOD on URI.com to get a $10 gift card when purchasing the Westermeyer Oil Float, part number W4300-38F. These high-performance floats are not just compatible with their own oil separators, but also available as a crossover model. Conveniently stocked at United Refrigeration. That's code ARPOD to claim your $10 gift card. Visit URI.com now.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Advanced Refrigeration Podcast. You're the host, Brett Wetzel and Kevin Compass. How was your... I hear it's cold up there. What's going on up there?
Yeah, it's frigid and freezing.
I saw a negative 22 with a wind chill today. Is that right?
It's about right. Shit. Yeah, it's been pretty miserable.
It's cold, but it's just Texas cold. Like, it was 10 degrees this morning. I went down with my son this weekend to go do a whole bunch of scout stuff. And we were driving back Monday, and we ended up not going to one of the hiking events because he woke up that morning. He's, Daddy, my legs really hurt. I was like, I don't want to do anything. I was like, okay, we'll go over to NASA and we'll have a late start and we just won't go to the hike. We'll go over there and go see the rocket and go to the spaceship and all kinds of other. So we did that and they had a sleepover. So we actually slept over at the place at NASA. And so we ended up leaving, I think around 8:45 right after breakfast. Only because I didn't want to get caught in anything, and I'm glad I did, because normally it takes about 4 hours and 40 minutes to get back, and it took probably about 5.5 hours to get back, but because other people left earlier, it was taking them like 7 hours to get back. And some of the bridges, like you couldn't step on the gas, you couldn't step on the brake, you just had to coast, and you had to be far enough behind just in case you did have to step on the brakes. Otherwise, you were going to be sliding into something, and it just wasn't going to be real fun. What did you do this weekend? Besides dying.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
I don't know why. This weekend, Sunday, I went to work because everything went like chaotic because it went down to minus 10 Sunday morning. So I had to go to work to help out on Sunday because they were like just bombed. And yeah. I had a CES unit that the main controller, the iPro controller, burned out. So that was real cool. It was a negative like 10 out, and I'm out there rewiring this rooftop to cut out the iPro controller and basically make it so I could run it off of the 22.2 gauge wire that runs the heat reclaim in the unit. And that's what I was using to cycle the heat on and off it after I basically just molested this rooftop unit. I had all kinds of stuff on wired to make this thing work.
The CES unit, that's like the Aeon type unit?
Yeah, it's basically an Aeon with a, with their own branded controller in there.
Okay.
And so then
that's controlling the heat for the store?
That's controlling the main unit, so it's an Aldi. It's only got one unit.
Oh.
So they have one 30-ton unit in the middle of the store.
Oh, and it's ran off like an older iPro controller?
Not an older. That's what they use on all their units.
Really? So,
yeah, they use an iPro controller, and it works fairly well in this application. Okay. But not that we've lost them when it gets cold, real cold out. We usually lose one or two of them. But I had a heater going in this thing, and I couldn't keep it going. And then it was just CO2 rack after CO2 rack down, and then all kinds of DX racks down. And this is the first year I've actually seen this issue is VFDs locking out because they get too cold.
Come on. I've never even heard of that.
So the Danfoss drives and ABB and a bunch of other ones must have a low threshold of -5 or whatever. So those Danfoss cabinets have those little rinky-dink heaters in there.
Yeah, my understanding that's just for moisture control. So essentially it doesn't cause the controls to sweat inside.
Yeah, I'm here to tell you it needs a heater in there. So really? Yeah, I have 6 or 7 stores with space heaters inside the VFD cabinets right now.
Like, because, I mean, they wouldn't space run heaters like from Walmart or something. You just pull,
yeah, one like out. Little space heaters, like. Like, that's the only way I can keep the drives on. And unfortunately, one of them was Walmart Sam's Club. And when it did that, when it went into fault because it was too cold, it unsplit the condenser. It was -15 out, and I'm out there with a recovery machine trying to suck the gas out of this condenser.
Damn. How many of those drives did you find where it hit low limit?
There was like, I had no joke, at least like 8 to 15 stores that I know that have heaters on them, or 8 to 15 drives. And it just I had at least 8 to 10 guys call me.
And it just said low limit?
Yeah, low temp limit.
Where the hell is that?
When you looked it up, there must be like a low limit in there. So if it knows the sensor goes bad inside the drive.
Okay.
That it just freaks out.
That's amazing. Well, actually, I wanted to show you something because I found something pretty cool. I was looking for something else, totally unrelated, and we could play with this another podcast day, but I just wanted to show this to you. I did not know that. Have you ever seen the Danfoss LCP simulator?
Not the LCP simulator. I just messed around with their like actual computer app.
All right. So I think you're talking about the app where you actually connect to it, right?
Yeah, where you connect to it and you could actually program it.
Yeah. So this is basically a drive. So I can't always remember like how to actually get into it. So as far as troubleshooting and stuff, this is going to be pretty freaking cool. They have a couple, I think there's four or five different ones. I just had to find the one that I was looking for, but it, like, just main menu. Like, I was trying to find like the SL and DCell. So you come down here, 3, 4 is your ramp up time. I just found it like probably about an hour and a half ago. So I haven't had time to go through and actually see what it's going to do, but you can set the amperage. You can set all the rest of the stuff. So I'm curious if it'll alarm out and like torque stall if it was a high torque type motor or whatever, depending on like how many horsepower or whatever I put in there. Like I said, I haven't had a chance to fully play around with it yet, but I'm just interested, like curious of what's going to happen that if it, yeah, it might, I don't know. I got to look around and see if it'll overamp. I don't think it will. I got to look at the amperage and all that other stuff, but I just want to show you this because I thought it was pretty cool.
That's cool.
So. But I was curious about like where did you find exactly where that parameter is? Is it a separate parameter in the drive or is that something internal?
I don't know. I didn't even care. I just threw a heater in there.
Nice.
Like at that point, it was so cold out and I was so miserably cold. I didn't care. I threw a heater in there like a hand grenade. Like, and all I know is every single one of them started back up.
That's utterly amazing. I didn't even know that was a thing. I had no idea.
I'm here to tell you, it definitely is.
That's freaking amazing.
And then the other thing that like screwed everything was a bunch of the CO2 racks had the drives just in the like cabinets, mm-hmm. like just inside like the, it's an outside rack in the box. Yeah, all those are screwed. I know of three of those right now that have heaters strapped to the bottom of them, like with zip ties.
Just trying to get the...
Because the medium temp compressor goes down, the medium temp drive compressor goes down for the TC, and it's just done. You might as well just go kick rocks.
Yeah, because as well as I do, if you don't have that medium temp compressor on a drive, it just doesn't react well for anything.
Like, no, it just overshoots and it just runs like complete.
Damn. That doesn't sound fun at all.
No, so I want to go over what me and you were talking about. We're going to go over. God, my computer's just all jacked up right now. We're going to go over.
So anyway, you were saying?
All right, let's go over how to get these CO2 racks to actually limp through this weather and make it and not crash constantly. Okay. So we're going to talk about a couple things, and some of it's flash tank stability, some of it's gas cooler tuning, some of it's issues that need to get addressed and like they need to change as an industry. First things first, like they need to fix these gas coolers and they need to stop bringing all the fans on at once. Like
that's the thing, like over in Canada, Andre and I were talking about this, like in Canada, like you basically have one whole climate, right? Because yeah, I know Canada's bigger, whatever, but everyone lives along just about the same border, right? And so all the parameters that they set for that rack should work technically everywhere. Same thing with Europe. They have fairly the same temperature regions all over the place. Where in the United States, what do we have? Six different regions of climate. You have Florida, you have where the hell you live in the frozen tundra, you have Texas, you have Arizona. So there's all these different places that all have all this different weather in the wintertime. So if it's set one way, it's not going to work necessarily the same way every single place you're at.
No, the ramping up of multiple fans together is just, especially in the wintertime. Like you could take that gas cooler. You cannot tell me it is more efficient to ramp six fans starting up on, off, on, off, on, off, or one fan running at like 40 or 50%.
Mm-hmm.
Like you can't tell me it's more efficient to do it the other way. Now, so some of these, like the Gutners, everyone I go to, LLCM mode is off and fan shedding is off. So it does help. So anytime I come to those Gutners, we had that podcast with Will, I set up that LLC mode and that fan shedding. Now, that helps. If you run too low of a signal speed for too long, below the threshold of the drop leg for too long, if it's controlling, it will take and start dropping off fans and try to equalize some run time on them. It does work.
Is that, hold on, does that work? How does that work, though? Because does it only work when it's mod bust in, or will it work if it's still getting a signal?
So from my understanding, and I may butcher this, from what I was told by them was if the set point signal is at a low threshold for long enough, meaning like 0 to 10%, like, or 0 to 20% for like long enough, it is going to shed fans off in order to try to keep that signal higher. And what, so if it's in slave mode, or if it's controlling off the drop leg temp, it's, and it can't maintain and it's overshooting too much, it's going to start shedding fans off.
And what did you call that mode again?
It's called, I think it's called LLC or LLCM mode.
Okay.
And then it will also start to turn the fans backwards.
Really?
So to try to keep the heat in the condenser. So to blow it back down and to try to keep it in. Now, you're screwed on these gas coolers, especially on the V styles. Then the adiabatics, you're pretty much screwed in the wintertime, especially like we had 40 mile an hour winds. Anything with a V style condenser was just getting they pounded out of it.
It was just getting pummeled. The discharge pressure was going way too low too quick.
Yeah. Now, okay. So here's my thing. All these CO2 racks come out set up to control off of drop leg temp.
Mm-hmm.
So like I just started up a store and it was same thing. It was controlled off drop leg temp. We switched it to drop leg pressure, saturation.
So what controller are you using to do that though? Are you using
that was microthermal. I've done it with CPC. I know how to do it with Danfoss. I haven't done a CO2 Danfoss store yet, but so this was microthermal. So we actually switched to controlling off saturation in microthermal. And then I set like the maximum saturation that it could go to is like 85 degrees. So it can't go any higher than 85 degree saturation, or it just locks the fans at 100%. So it's never going to hit that transcritical point. So once it hits 85, it's locking its fans on. So you're good with that. Mm-hmm. Now, here's the problem. So you have the high pressure valve
mm-hmm.
trying to do one thing or two things. It's trying to maintain or three things. I'm sorry. It's trying to maintain subcooling. Mm-hmm. It's trying to maintain a minimum receiver or drop leg pressure. And then it's trying to maintain your receiver pressure.
Mm-hmm.
So the issue is when you're running off subcooling, and when it's subcritical and it's really cold out and those fans come on, what is your subcooling going to do? It's going to shoot up like a missile.
Yeah.
True. Because now you're making super cold liquid. You got 50, 60 degree liquid coming through there. Say it's 0-10 degrees outside. Those fans, six fans kick on. Even if they hit 10%, that's a lot of air volume. So you get a lot of subcooling real quick. So then it starts this like massive hunting between the drop leg temp sensor that's controlling the fans and your drop leg pressure, because it's all over the place. And it's that controller is trying to constantly manipulate that set point, that drop leg pressure set point, in order to achieve that subcooling.
Mm-hmm.
So you start this vicious cycle. So if you take that variable away and you make that variable pressure control, so now you're above the minimum of the high pressure valve. So you take that variable out of play. Now you're only controlling off subcooling and you're trying to maintain that receiver pressure. Mm-hmm. So you're only maintaining off of subcooling. So now it's just trying to hit that subcooling target. So you end up getting a more stable control going to saturated pressure. And you're able to keep that control more stable because now it's only trying to maintain subcooling. It's not ramping those fans up and down off drop leg temp. So it's not as go ahead, Brett.
No, all I was going to say is, so in subcritical mode, right? Because that's where we're going to be in the wintertime, obviously. Instead of, you're saying that it's actually taking the drop leg temperature. If it's programmed one way where it's taking the drop leg temperature, it's just trying to maintain subcooling based off that drop leg temperature. Has the temperature of its ramping up and down, it's going to throttle your high pressure valve in order to control that. So it's going to go up and down.
It's looking at drop leg pressure and temperature to calculate subcooling.
Mm-hmm.
And say the way these racks all come out with drop leg temp control for the fans. So the drop leg temp sensor is controlling your fans. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then the high pressure valve is also controlling drop leg subcooling and minimum drop leg pressure and your receiver pressure. It's helping with that.
Okay.
So you have three variables that high pressure valve is looking at. So looking at receiver pressure, your drop leg pressure minimum, and it's also controlling off of subcooling to keep that most efficient. When it's subcritical like this, when it's this cold, I don't give a rat's ass about the subcooling.
Because
mm-hmm. you're making liquid on the condenser. You yeah. care about keeping the pressure up in the receiver and keeping the rack moving.
Agreed.
So that's why taking that control off a drop leg temp. So you basically take one of those variables away from this thing, because now it's just controlling. It's not so much, it's going to hit that minimum pressure.
Mm-hmm.
If it does, mm-hmm. it's going to hold back like a holdback valve, but you're essentially taking that pressure and you're limiting it. Say, it's once the minimum pressure the gas for the gas cooler 650 pounds. And that's when that hold back starts holding, or that high pressure valve starts holding back your pressure. Okay. If you take that variable away and let the fans just do their thing on pressure, that fan is going to shut off way before it gets to 650. So
low limits on the fan control for E2. I've seen it. You told me it's lower, but like Target puts theirs, I believe, at like 800.
Everybody's like masking it by doing that. Everybody's masking this like droplet control by putting that fan cutout at 800.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So as it maintains the subcooling, it's going to open up the valve, which is going to raise the pressure, and it's just going to keep ramping up the fans, closing down the HPV. So they're just going to keep chasing each other. It's essentially
they're chasing each other, and everybody's doing this like 800 pound minimum, 750 pound like fan cutout. Like they're using this fan cutout as a crutch, and it's hiding the problem, making it worse. Because
where are you putting that set point though? Because you're saying pressure control. Okay.
So I run off saturation. So I run it off of pressure converted to temperature, just like we would a normal rack condenser.
Regular TD. That's all you're doing.
Regular TD.
Okay. And then letting like the iPro controller control its subcooling?
Letting it control its subcooling. Like this is microthermal, not the iPro, but like it's same deal. Let it control its subcooling. Okay. But the fans are controlling your saturation temp. If I'm setting a saturation temp of, say, 60 degrees, the fans are ramping up and down to control the saturation at 60 degrees. Okay. The HPV is going to move its drop leg pressure set point, or it's going to artificially raise the drop leg pressure to get subcooling. So it's going to back up. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, it doesn't need to back up as much, because if you keep the fan steady and you keep everything steady, it's just going to, you know, constantly float in that 3 to 5 degrees of subcooling.
Okay.
And it's going to constantly be opening and closing. You want to keep, or you want to keep like a constant volume going through there. Now, if you put it off drop leg temp and that valve goes to close down a little bit and increase the subcooling, what's going to happen to your drop leg temp? It's going to shoot down like a missile and the fans are going to shut off. Mm-hmm. Okay. That valve's going to open. Your drop leg temp's going to come back up. Your fans are going to come back on. Your drop leg, it's going to constantly keep, you know, peak valley, because you can't, because your subcooling is doing the opposite of what the drop leg temp is. So when the subcooling goes up, the drop leg temp is going to follow it.
Mm-hmm.
And when it opens, it's going to, your drop leg temp's going to come shoot back up.
Okay. So let's just say, for argument's sake, I know yours was microthermal. So if we were talking about Copeland, CPC, Emerson, whatever you want to call it, you would have the iPro still maintain that 3 to 5 degrees during subcooling. But you're talking about the straight up fan control, correct?
Straight up fan control. You don't need to mess with anything on the iPro or microthermal or the 326. Let it do its thing. You change the minimum set point in there. You make sure it's low enough, and just like a holdback valve, you don't want it lower than the fan control.
So you're going to be doing, essentially, you're just going to be doing TD control under the condenser control, and just putting, whether you be having an adiabatic or whether you have a dry gas cooler, let's just say dry gas cooler, we'll do a 10 degree TD. So whatever the ambient is, it's just going to maintain that, but you're putting a minimum pressure on there, correct? Still keeping pressure.
I'll put the lockout like 15 pounds above what the high pressure minimum is. So if the high pressure minimum is 650 pounds, I'll go like 670 on the fans, 650 or 660, 670 on the fans for the cutout. You should never hit it, because your fan set point should be way higher than that.
Understood. I just want to simplify it a little bit.
I don't bring them as low as 40 degrees. I see some of these racks going down to 40 degrees. I don't see it. I don't see how. I've always been told that below 60 degree saturated condensing temperature, it costs more in fan horsepower. It may not be true now with CO2, but I just don't see it. I think it causes more problems than it helps. So I try to keep it away from that minimum 650. Now, when you're running off that saturation, so it buys you a little bit more of a window, and the fans become a lot more reactive.
Mm-hmm.
They're controlling off of pressure, saturated pressure. Doesn't care what the drop leg temp is. It's not hunting, because the HPV started holding back. And now your drop leg temp is shooting down like a missile because it's just backing up liquid and subcooling the crap out of it. And now it's going to go dump that subcooled liquid in the flash tank.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it gets, that's where your flash tank starts loading up and then unloading, loading up and unloading. When it, that subcooling gets real high and then HPV opens up, it just slams that, that flash tank with a bunch of load.
So it's the equivalent of having, like you said, having a holdback valve set higher than where the fans are. I'm sorry, lower than what the fans are while they're turning on, where it's just going to stack up refrigerant in the gas cooler, increase a whole bunch of subcooling, and then let free. And then because you're doing that, you're just, you know, dumping a whole bunch of load in the flash tank, then unloading, and then dumping a whole bunch, which causes your, in your, you know, sporadic flash tank pressure, so to speak.
Correct. You could have the best tuning in the world, and it's not going to be reactive enough for that, because it's just going to be load, unload, load, unload, load, unload, before your PIDs can just calm down. Yep. You've seen what it looked like after I swapped those racks around.
Yep.
It went from 120 PSI swings in a flash tank down to 5 to 10.
Yeah. Yeah.
We were at like zero load, like running one compressor on each rack. It's night and day difference. And it all depends on how you mess with it. Now, I will say this, a mm-hmm. standard gas cooler, like a horizontal or a vertical gas cooler, 1,000 times better in the wintertime with this, the way it reacts. Yes. This is another thing, like split. Like some of these manufacturers are going to have to start splitting these condensers. Like you're going to have to start splitting these gas coolers.
If not splitting, at least putting a bypass in there, especially.
Yeah,
in,
the bypass I buy for like smaller stuff, but bigger stuff, I think it's going to. I don't think the bypass is the answer. I think the split is the answer. Like splitting the gas cooler seems much more efficient than just bypassing it altogether. Cause then you're going to bypass and then it's going to sit in the gas cooler. And you're going to, I think you're going to log liquid up there and then it's going to come out like a banshee.
I'm still doing that. Is this the lower threshold that you're talking about? The undershoot?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm not a fan of letting them control the condenser, like gas cooler. Like I've only seen one manufacturer lets Gunner control the gas cooler off drop leg temp. I'm not a fan of it. Like I'd rather have whatever EMS is doing it control this, send a slave signal to them. It works way better. The Gunner controller works good. It just, it's much easier, I think, with having the whole EMS controlled off of one thing rather than having this standalone. Yeah, sure, have it ready in standalone mode, like if it needs to be like switched over. Like I always set them up and get them ready to go, so if something does crash, it will run on its own. But I want to see it run in slave mode. It just works way better in slave mode.
The algorithms are all working together. You don't have
you don't have microthermal controlling the high pressure valve and everything else, and then it doesn't know what the hell the fans are doing because it's controlled off something else. Same thing with CPC or Emerson. They don't know what the fans are doing. They're just it's kind of dark. Now, getting that flash tank under control and keeping it steady is another huge thing. If you're surging and it's going all over the place, mm-hmm. it's going to cause nonstop problems. Now, a couple settings that I've been messing with as we were having issues and not having issues. So in microthermal, they call them the limits and the fences.
Okay.
I'm trying to find it right now. So basically what you could do is you have your low receiver limit. So mm-hmm. your low receiver pressure, you could set that to a minimum. So I raised that up higher than most people would. So for example, with microthermal, you can tune it as much as you want.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up raising the low pressure on the receiver to 500 pounds. So my set point was 515.
Mm-hmm.
And at 500 pounds, it is going to ignore the subcooling value. And it's going to just dump until it keeps that receiver pressure steady. So that seemed to help a lot.
So is that, so in the Danfoss one, I'm seeing N81 here, gas cooler minimum pressure. That would be the equivalent of what you're talking about, yes?
Yes. God dang it, you brought it up before me. I was sitting there trying to pull it up. Yeah, Dropbox is slow right now. So that gas or that receiver minimum pressure, an 81 is your gas cooler minimum pressure. Then you have a receiver minimum pressure. It ignores that gas cooler subcooling to keep that minimum receiver pressure up.
There you go. Minimum pressure in the receiver and I'm sorry, N71.
Yes. So I've been setting that up higher. So that N71, I've been setting it up higher now.
Today's episode is sponsored by the RefRush Shield RDP Series Differential Pressure Monitors from Westermeyer Industries, now available for transcritical CO2 systems in addition to other common pressures and refrigerants. When the filter element of your coalescing oil separator is contaminated, it can hurt your system's performance and efficiency. But how do you know when it's time to replace that filter? Wait too long to replace, and you could end up with a nasty filter blowout. But replacing too often can be a waste of time and money. The answer is installing a differential pressure monitor. The RDP series differential pressure monitors, including the new transcritical CO2 model, are available now from Westermeyer Industries. To find out more information, email sales@westermeyerin.com. That's WESTERMEYERIN.com.
The only thing that sucks here on the 326 is it has to be a bar lower than the set point. So if your set point is, say, 36.5, you have to go 35.5 for that minimum.
All right. So just so everyone knows, 14.5 PSI per one bar. Also, the other thing.
Just Google it. It's so much easier to run the calculator.
Oh, Jesus. I just multiplied. Anyway, but then also every setting in the 326 is under bar. So that's why sometimes the numbers don't make any sense. You're like, what's 34? Take 34 and multiply it times the 14.5, and that'll get your PSI of what you're going to essentially be doing.
Or you type it in the Google calculator like me because you're lazy.
God. Only because your fingers are frozen from the freaking tundra.
Yeah, so I find that in 71 setting, like at 20, at 25, and that's why a lot of these racks crash so much, because you get this subcooling. It's trying to maintain subcooling. It's so cold, and it's just hunting like crazy. If you raise that set point up, your receiver pressure will flatline. Almost.
So you're saying it's set for 20 out of the box?
Yeah. I just had one today. I was talking to somebody and yeah.
290?
Yep.
Jesus.
People don't utilize it for what it is.
All right.
And then the other thing is I've been seeing a lot of the minimum gas pressure set to like 750.
Damn.
Like I run the minimum down way lower because, all right, here's the thing. We were talking about this. If you're going to run a 550 pound flash tank pressure or 500 pound flash tank pressure, why do you need a 700 pound discharge pressure?
You don't.
Let the thing do its thing. Let it run like a normal system. Like I was talking about this with somebody. What would be the difference between running the discharge down to 500 pounds?
That just means the HPV would just constantly stay open. You're going to be getting subcooling anyway.
Screw the subcooling at that point. It's a normal system.
Yeah, because you're okay. Yeah, no, I get it.
So if you ran the discharge pressure down and you got it down to 500 pounds, mm-hmm. and it was all the way down to 500 pounds. Yeah, you may have some oil separation issues, and you would only have a 100-pound delta across the compressor. I don't know how that would all work out, but at that point, the flash gas bypass valve would pretty much be shut, and it would be running like a normal system. At that point, lowering the discharge pressure to 650 minimum for the min-max, basically, for the lowest it can go is 650 before it starts holding back. 700 to 800 pounds is insane. Like, why are you running that much higher?
So you're saying run your high pressure for 650, right?
Yep. That's what I set my minimums at, is 650.
Damn, that's low.
Why? I mean, it's not. Yeah,
no, I know. Especially if you have a coalescing oil separator, I guess it really wouldn't matter, right?
Even the two racks that I've seen now with centrifugal separators, I watched them run with 4% load with just a flash tank. and it was like minus two out.
650. What do you know what that is? Saturated?
No, I don't.
807.
Too lazy to look it up.
You bastard.
Right, so well, it's low. It's like in the 50s or below the 40s.
Is it really?
Yeah. Because 515 is 34 degrees.
Okay.
So it's got to be in the 40s. You're not really going to hit that on a running system. So that's what I'm saying is making sure that minimum gas cooler pressure is set low enough, and then your absolutely like minimum receiver pressure is set low enough, and then your max receiver pressure, making sure that's set to like a good setting, like 560, 570. Don't let it go any higher than that, but you need enough band in there for it to move, but you don't want that set too high. You want it to shut that HPV down a little bit if it starts getting too high.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't want it to bang on the suction group all the way up, because then it just makes the problem worse. Because if you start staging up the suction group when you got low load, because you're dumping a bunch of gas in there, it takes that subcooling, increases it tenfold because you increase the pressure and the temperature is still down, and then it dumps a bunch of gas more, and then it overshoots, and then it shuts everything down.
See, I'm wondering, it's not working out for some odd reason. I got to do some more investigation, but every time I try to put the high pressure point lower than a certain number, I keep getting an alarm on the Bitzer software where it tells me high pressure lower than the critical point. So I'm looking.
How could it be lower than a critical point?
I don't know. It doesn't make any sense.
I wonder if there's a limit on the valves of the compressor, like what the differential needs to be across it. I'm sure there has to be.
Oh, because they're reeds. They're not discus, so they need that differential across in order to seat.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Maybe they need that minimum differential across it to seat.
Hmm.
I don't know. Like, I would assume the Copelands are discuses, right? A seat discus on the side, I think.
I don't know. That I'd have to look into.
That'd be something we'd have to ask Bitzer and Copeland, is we'd have to reach out to the old manufacturer.
Yeah. So.
Figure that out. But those settings usually take these CO2 racks and just smooth them out. Like, obviously mess with your PIDs, but I wouldn't be. PID tuning under low load is like a lost cause.
Don't do it.
I had to do it. And it took me 2.5 days to get these racks to even run remotely right. And that was me just messing with stuff like nonstop. But I have no load on these racks, and they're probably not going to get any better. But, and then also getting your suction control for the medium temp under control. If your suction control for the medium temp is shit, your gas cooler control is going to be too.
Hold on. Let's keep talking about the flash tank real quick, because I'm trying to see going too low or going too high. When you are doing the flash tank pressure, obviously it's modulating that PGV. Are you saying you're finding a lot of the set points where they're real far off? So it looks like receiver
wide bands.
Yeah. So receiver reference on this one right now is N91, right? So N91 would be your, let's just say that would be your, what you're actually trying to maintain in your actual flash tank. So for argument's sake, let's just say it's 490, right? So divided by 14.5. So that means you'd put a set point of like 33.79 in for the receiver pressure. And you said you have to be at least one bar ahead, like top and bottom.
Lower. You have to be one bar lower and then usually one bar higher for the max.
Okay. So then that would be 490. All right. So you'd have it set 490 if you're, that was your flash tank set point for the rack manufacturer, and then just go 14.5 higher and 14.5 lower. And if you need to tune accordingly with the PID, you can do that. But at least that'll give you a lower band, so the flash tank won't be, you know, doing one of these numbers. It should be maintaining, you know, a fairly tight band. Yes?
Yeah, no, that's the premise around it.
Okay.
You're trying to get that, and then mess with the P bands. I'm not going to go into messing with the P bands and stuff on this. I would not recommend starting to mess with P bands and I bands until you fully understand this. And you kind of mess with your set points first before you start going to mess with PIDs, because you could really screw this thing up. And before you guys start making changes, and especially in the 326A, start writing it down before you change it. Like, when we tune these, and I have a pretty good tune set for these that I've made over the years, like, we take the document and I take it and edit it in Adobe and write what it was and what the new one was in each setting. So like in 71, I'll put like what the old setting was and what the new setting is. And I'll mess around with it and change it like that. So that way I have a map of what was changed and what was not changed.
And some people ask, they're like, what are good settings? And I'm like, well, you got to play with it. And you have to read through the document of whatever you're trying to do. Not that there isn't one set of set points that's going to be the end all catch all, because it's also dependent on everything else. It's dependent on how high your gas cooler pressure is running. It's dependent on.
I had some pretty good PIDs.
I hate you.
That's a god awful truth.
I hate you so much.
That's funny.
Hate you anyway. Let's go through some of the settings for the gas cooler since we already have the document up.
So I will say this, if you got a Carnot rack, the max opening of the flash gas bypass the high HPV valve, like their racks, like you may not see it. They may have a max percentage of like 50% in there. So like they massively oversize a lot of their valves. Mm-hmm. So some of those may be limited. So just so you guys know, if you see a max of that and it's sitting at that max open, mm-hmm. it's probably plugged up because there's screens in some of these valves.
So yes. I also just found out that now some of the valves don't. And then what some of the manufacturers are doing, they're putting a screen.
A Y strainer.
Yeah, directly before the HPV valve. Because I had a guy rip one apart and he's like, there's no screen here, but there's one before it. I'm like, I was like, all right, so now I know.
Because so there was one before you saw, and Jesus.
Yeah.
I always look at it before, and here's the thing. Some of these have rubber O-rings in them. Don't be ripping this apart without an O-ring, because what happens is like the CO2 gets in the rubber O-ring and starts popping out. And you either A, got to go throw it in a freezer, or B, start hitting it with liquid CO2 so it shrinks back down enough where you can get it back in.
Mm-hmm.
Pay attention to that. And then I absolutely hate the Y strainers. Like, I've had multiple leak when we take it apart afterwards.
Really?
Yeah. Not a big fan of using the Y strainers. But if you have an HPV valve that's like constantly, it's max open, then yeah. But if your head pressure is low and it's trying to maintain that receiver pressure, it's going to open up more. So you're going to see it start opening up more. That's why I'm a big fan of that minimum receiver pressure being higher. So that way it opens HPV more and keeps the rack loaded up more. And then the second thing, which I've started to kind of mess with this and we've played with it on other stuff, mm-hmm. is floating the subcooling set point. So if you were to take the subcooling set point and float it, so say you run, when you're transcritical, you're running like a 3 to 5. Mm-hmm. Whatever it is, whatever their spec is, you run 3 to 5. Mm-hmm. If you were to take that subcooling set point and put it to 1,
mm-hmm.
it would essentially open up the high pressure valve more and would load the rack more. So I screwed this up last winter and I fat fingered a set point and ended up loading up the flash tank,
mm-hmm.
and sending it to Jesus. Like it was. I came in, I'm like, what the hell? This thing's, it's a -5 out. This thing's running both medium temp compressors. The drive's at 50%. It's just rolling. Rack's running beautiful, like summertime. Mm-hmm. I messed up that subcooling set point and actually sent it to 0.5. And it made it through the night and it ran way better. So it opened that HPV, the high pressure valve more. And loaded up the flash tank, which when it loaded up the flash tank, it loaded up medium temp suction, which kept all the gas moving and kept it loaded up and moving.
Yeah, because if you're trying to maintain that 3 to 5 degrees of subcooling during subcritical, the HPV is going to essentially close down, which is going to limit the amount of load or flash gas going to your flash tank. Inadvertently, you opened up the HPV more because you raised the subcooling to 0.5. Yeah. you know what I meant.
Yeah, lower the set point.
Lower the set point to 0.5. And then essentially now the HPV is going to open up more of that flash gas is going to come out of that valve and then load up more flash gas into the flash tank itself, which means more medium temp compressor. So if you would have a loading issue when it does get cold, that might be something to temporarily look into unless you can actually write that set point where it is varying.
I think on the iPro you can.
I think they just did that, did they not?
Yeah. I know on microthermal it's a bindable variable. So you could bind it because I was playing around with it. So you could essentially write an MPC and say if your rack gets to a low enough percentage in the medium temp or it's at a certain degree outside, I would probably do it up temperature outside air temp and it gets to a certain degree outside, you could lower the flash tank or lower the subcooling set point and that would essentially load up the flash tank. It's just the same as, okay, so you could raise the flash tank set point, say raise the flash tank set point to 550.
Mm-hmm.
So you could float more.
All right.
Which essentially saves more energy too. So, yeah, right. But like that doesn't really help in a low load situation. It'd probably make it worse. But in a situation where you want to float more and you need that oil pressure differential, you need everything else, being able to float that flash tank set point up to a higher percent, to a higher pressure, gives you that option. Now, you could do that on a 326 with the, and probably the same thing with the iPro with the enable for the heat reclaim to bump it up. I absolutely disagree with bumping these racks in a transcritical when they run heat reclaim. I think it's a dumb thing to do, and I think it wastes a ton of energy.
But back to what you were saying about the varying subcooling. In essence, you could almost, like when it hits 60 degree ambient, you could change that.
Say from 5 to 2.
Yeah.
5 to 3. And start, you can make it linear and start stepping it down.
Yeah. You use like a loop sequencer to vary that.
I wouldn't even do that. I would just write a flexible combiner and give it limits, make it run itself through the flexible combiner.
Oh,
make it a scaling.
Yeah. So at 60, you can make it 2.
Anything. And then like 40, make it 1. Whatever doing that. That I think works better than the gas cooler bypass.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Because you're essentially doing the same thing. Like you're going through the gas cooler still and you're making liquid, but with the gas cooler, the non-gas cooler bypass, you're just dumping hot gas right into the side of the flash tank. You're making a ton of load, but you're also destroying any subcooling you have in that tank. Because you're essentially dumping hot gas on the top of liquid.
Since we're talking about this, more of the set points, the gas cooler max pressure, you have that at what, 1250?
That gas cooler max pressure is your gas cooler max pressure set point, basically, of what it, and it starts opening up the HPV valve. So mm-hmm. I usually go 1250 to 1350. Like I think these microthermal stores, I have them set like 1300.
Mm-hmm.
So it won't, if over 1300 pounds, it's going to start opening up that HPV to keep it lower. So 100-ish is where you're going to start seeing your high pressure switches at. Mm-hmm. That's the thing. You want to stay away from that high pressure switch range because you end up in this spot where like it's a mechanical switch and it's set for 1500, 1550 pounds. Well, they're all not going to be like, they're going to be hundreds of pounds off, some of them.
And this is where we were talking about before. The N81, this is what we were talking about, the min gas cooler pressure, where you don't want the fans still trying to ramp on while you're trying to maintain that minimum, correct?
Correct. And if you look at it and think of it like a normal rack, and say you set the hold back valve higher than the fans,
mm-hmm.
what's going to happen? You're going to keep the fans running, but you're going to be just... the subcooling is going to be coming up through the moon because that gas is, that liquid is sitting in that condenser. It's just getting cooled down to ambient air.
Also be aware.
So you're just gaining tons of subcooling. So if you look at, okay, you look at it like a Hill Phoenix store, okay. Mm-hmm. 46 degree fan set point, right? Damn. 46 degrees is 610 pounds saturated. If your minimum fan is set to 750 cutout, you're just fighting yourself.
Just let the HPV.
So your minimum fan and your drop leg control are just fighting itself. So if you run it off saturation and set it to 750, your saturation stays constant. Once your saturation stays constant, your subcooling can stay more constant.
That makes a lot of sense.
You're taking one of the variables away and making it constant. If you're trying to control to a variable and you have two different change, both variables are changing at the same time. So you have, you're essentially trying to control a PID loop with a pressure converted to temperature and a temperature. So you have two different thing variables you're trying to control. So why not make one steady and then just control off of subcooling? That's your only variable. If saturation is steady, then the only other variable moving is drop leg temp. It's going to become much more steady, and you're going to stop raising the pressure set point up so much to maintain that subcooling.
Yeah. The other thing is make sure that you actually read through this manual, because like there was something that I did not know. I couldn't understand why the rack, even though the pressure was above what it was supposed to be as far as on the gas cooler side, the flash tank, or I'm sorry, the valve just kept shutting down to zero. And it was because of my, the 326 that was hooked up to it was hitting the high limit, and it was shutting down because it didn't want to pop the relief. So it throttled all the way down to the, 0% every single time. It got up to, I think they had it set for 590 as far as the max flash tank pressure. So
you will hit a like when it's super hot out, like we've had this happen a couple times on a rack where the receiver pressure and the gas cooler, say the gas cooler is just filthy and it's off at high head, bam, on, off, bam, on, off. Your receiver pressure is high. It's going off on that receiver pressure limit and the high pressure at the same time because it's trying to protect it. It can't pull the receiver down low enough to keep the fast enough to keep the high pressure valve running.
Yeah, because
the high pressure valve shuts.
Yeah, because the compressors are trying to run, but they can't because they keep hitting that.
Correct. And it just starts this nasty downward spiral. The only thing you could do in that situation, so A is get the condenser oil hose down, and then B is vent off the receiver. That is the only way when it's that bricked up to actually get it back going is just start blowing off the top of the receiver.
Just to limit some of that flash gas off the top.
Yeah, you have to blow off the top of the receiver in order to get that. Once it gets rolling and you get a compressor like staged up, it usually starts dropping it fast enough. You're not going to lose much, maybe 10, 15, 20 pounds of CO2, but you're going to lose more from that relief clapping off.
100%.
That's where like that situation sucks, and it's not going to. It's not going to start back up without you going out there and doing it until somebody like Target has those pre-relief valves. But even in that situation, it's not going to work because it's not going to be in that pre-relief band yet. Having something like that to burp it would essentially work. But at that point, you're going to have to go out there. There's an issue. The gas cooler is probably plugged or fans are out. You're going to end up out there anyway.
The other thing that I just recently found out, I always screw up the letters on the valve. Is it the IMT? No, well, no, that's the top part, but the IMTCS or whatever, the bottom portion of that valve. Yeah. A friend of mine just had the base apparently wasn't screwed down. So the HPV was at 100%, and but the BGV was only at 17.
Yeah.
I'm like, that doesn't make any sense. It sounded like the top portion was messed up, but he yanked it off and he replaced it, but there's nothing wrong. But before he went to go replace it, he noticed that he put his finger on the bottom there because you're just trying to get everything back together as soon as possible. But he had noticed that when he went to go put it in, the bottom base was like wiggling back and forth. So essentially it wiggled its way out. And so 100%, the valve thought it was at 100%, but it really wasn't because that bottom base piece was screwed out a little bit.
Those valves, I like them. I rather have like a Danfoss CCMT valve. mm-hmm. as a high pressure valve. It's just way more reliable and easy to work on. You don't have the magnetic driver. You don't have to worry about any of that. This is the stepper output. And just so you guys know, so if you're going Danfoss valves to like anything Emerson, Copeland style stuff, or like microthermal, you're going to invert the red and green. So red on the Danfoss valve is going to go to green on microthermal or Sporlan or anything like that. And then vice versa. If you got Danfoss stuff going on, or if you got Sporlan stuff going on Danfoss, you're going to do the same thing. You're going to invert the red and the green. So that's one thing to watch out for. And every manufacturer seems to be screwed up on these HPV valves and everything else. Like they're so used to wiring red, green, black, it's inverted. So Danfoss is opposite of everybody else for that, the way they do their windings. Now it'll shut if you wire it red to red, green to green, black to black, white to white. It'll shut. It just won't open.
Where are you finding this? I'm reading through this now. Increasing the refrigerant capacity, N88. Have you ever played with that? It looks like
So what that does is when you shift to that, it raises the flash gas or the flash tank pressure up. Essentially raises the flash tank pressure up and takes capacity. So that's what I was talking about earlier about raising that flash tank pressure so you can float higher. So you could use that in a low load or a floating situation. So say you want to float higher and you need like that 50, 60 pounds across the oil system to properly feed that oil. So you need to get that oil pressure and the reservoir higher. That's one way to do it. And if you want to float higher and you want to raise your medium temp suction up, you can raise your gas cooler or your flash tank pressure up. So you can raise it up, say hit 550 with it. So it closes that and it runs a 550 pound set point. So that gives you extra capacity. It closes that DI on there.
That's one and two, right?
Yeah. Yes.
So because I always thought that was the enable on that controller. Apparently I was wrong.
You could set it up for different things, I believe.
Oh, okay. Because usually they'll set it up on the battery backup that if it loses the enable, it'll close off both the HPV and the BGV just to basically close off those valves in case of a power failure. So we don't let's just say it goes off on high pressure. So you might have 1740 heading up at the gas cooler. And so if you let that HPV open, that means that it's going to send it, as you would say, send the flash tank to Jesus, because then all that vapor is going to go right in the flash tank and then blow the relief.
Yeah. Yeah. You can set it up as enable, and then you can set it up as that too.
Oh, yeah. Here it is.
Yeah. So you got either or. You got the external switch or you got the capacity function. So that's the only thing nice if you're using the 326. Mm-hmm. And you're doing it like that, and you're using like a, so you have to use a separate Danfoss actuator now for the HPV valve. If you're using like a, not if you're using an ICAD, if you're using like a, you have to use a Danfoss driver basically.
Oh,
I forget the number on it, but it's whatever Danfoss driver that they're using. So what they're doing now is they're tying the main switch for that and just killing the HPV. We don't care about killing the flash gas bypass valve. That can do whatever it wants. But if there's a power failure, you want to shut the high pressure valve down.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the one you want to shut. So that's why like it hasn't been an issue lately, because nobody's really... I haven't seen anybody use an ICAD in a while. I was under the impression that those were being obsoleted.
The actual... The valves themselves?
The driver.
Hmm.
Or there was some kind of supply problem with them.
Probably a supply problem, because industrial uses those for everything, whether it be pressure control. They have multiple functions for
them. So it may have been a supply problem. So a lot of people stop using them. I would much rather have a CCMT off of a separate driver. I think it's a lot more bulletproof that way than using the ICAD, because if you lose the ICAD driver, you're screwed. If you get a CCMT valve, you could just swap the head out of the CCMT valve pretty quick. And it's a lot easier to get a CCMT valve than ICAD parts.
Yeah.
It's a lot cheaper too. Probably about half the price.
I got you. I want to keep rolling with this because I want to cover some of the stuff in the iPro that we didn't talk about. And we still haven't talked about suction, leveling out the suction pressure. I want to continue this conversation, but man, it's already rolling up on an hour.
Yeah, let's just end it and we'll make another one.
All right, guys. I guess we'll talk to you next time.